A young man walks out of prison after serving time for drug possession. He's paid his debt to society, or so he believes. Within weeks, he's denied public housing, rejected from dozens of jobs, stripped of food stamps, and barred from voting. His criminal record, a scarlet letter in digital form, follows him everywhere, ensuring that punishment never truly ends. This isn't an unfortunate side effect of our justice system, it's the system working exactly as designed. Michelle Alexander's explosive work reveals a truth that makes Americans deeply uncomfortable. We didn't end racial oppression in the 1960s, we simply redesigned it. The new Jim Crow isn't a provocative metaphor, it's a precise diagnosis of how mass incarceration functions as America's latest racial caste system, maintaining hierarchies through law enforcement rather than whites-only signs. American history follows a disturbing cycle. Each racial control system spawns a more sophisticated successor. After slavery's abolition, Reconstruction brought Black Americans to Congress and thriving businesses. Then Jim Crow dismantled this progress through legal segregation and thousands of lynchings between 1877 and 1950. When civil rights victories toppled Jim Crow, conservative strategists adapted. Nixon's aide, H.R. Haldeman, recorded the president calling blacks the whole problem while seeking methods to exploit this without appearing to. John Ehrlichman later admitted their 1968 campaign explicitly targeted racial fears through law and order rhetoric. By 1982, Reagan launched the war on drugs despite less than 2% of Americans viewing drugs as pressing. Federal drug enforcement budgets exploded from $8 million to $95 million in 3 years, while treatment funding was slashed. The timing proved devastating, just as deindustrialization collapsed inner cities and industrial employment of black men plummeted from 70% in 1970 to 28% by 1987, America responded with unprecedented policing rather than investment. The drug war operates with minimal legal constraints. The Supreme Court dismantled Fourth Amendment protections, allowing police to stop and search citizens without warrants or probable cause. In Florida v. Bostick, the court ruled that police approaching bus passengers and requesting searches constituted consensual encounters, ignoring that most people feel compelled to comply. The federal government fuels this system through massive financial incentives. The 1988 Edward Byrne Memorial Program offered grants prioritizing drug enforcement, creating narcotics task forces nationwide. The Pentagon donated military equipment, transforming rhetorical war into literal warfare. Paramilitary drug raids skyrocketed from a few hundred annually in 1972 to 40,000 by 2001. Violent encounters where officers blast into homes at night, throwing grenades and pointing weapons at everyone inside. Reagan's 1984 forfeiture amendment allowed departments to keep most cash and assets seized during drug operations, even without criminal charges. Police could substantially increase budgets by taking property from suspected drug users or dealers, creating perverse incentives to prioritize profitable busts over public safety. Despite Gideon v. Wainwright guaranteeing counsel for poor defendants, America's public defender system has collapsed. Defenders manage 100 to 200 cases simultaneously, averaging 7 minutes per case. Some handle over 400 annually, triple the recommended maximum. The American Bar Association concluded in 2004 that the fundamental right to a lawyer effectively does not exist in practice for countless people across the United States. Trials have virtually disappeared. 97% of federal cases and 94% of state cases end in plea bargains. Prosecutors wield unchecked power through overcharging and mandatory minimums. The 1986 Anti-Drug Abuse Act established brutal sentences, 5 or 10 years for first-time offenders versus 6 months or less in other developed nations. 5 grams of crack cocaine triggered the same 5-year minimum as 500 grams of powder, a 100-to-1 disparity devastating minority communities. These mandatory minimums coerce guilty pleas by threatening decades in prison. Prosecutors charge defendants with multiple felonies carrying 30 years, then offer 5-year plea deals. Reliable estimates suggest 2-5% of prisoners are innocent, 40,000 to 100,000 wrongfully incarcerated individuals. Over 10% of proven wrongful convictions involved false guilty pleas. Our prison population exploded from 350,000 to 2.3 million, not from rising crime, but from sentencing policy changes. One study suggests the entire increase from 1980 to 2001 came from sentencing changes alone. The system depends more on the prison label than prison time. Once branded a felon, discrimination becomes perfectly legal and basic citizenship rights vanish. As of 2008, 2.3 million were incarcerated, but 5.1 million were under community correctional supervision, most never serving prison time. The felony record becomes a permanent badge of inferiority. Drug felons are barred from public housing, denied food stamps, forced to disclose convictions on applications, and excluded from countless professions. Locked out of mainstream society, most return to prison, 30% within 6 months, 68% within 3 years. Those on probation or parole faced constant surveillance, warrantless searches, and arrest for technical violations. In 1980, parole violators were 1% of prison admissions. By 2000, 35%. This creates a closed circuit of perpetual marginality, hundreds of thousands released yearly, only to cycle back endlessly. The war on drugs has devastated communities of color while ignoring identical crimes in white communities. In 7 states, African Americans constitute 80 to 90% of drug offenders sent to prison. In at least 15 states, blacks are admitted to prison on drug charges at rates 20 to 57 times greater than whites. Yet all races use and sell illegal drugs at remarkably similar rates. Government data from 2000 showed white students using cocaine, crack, and heroin at 7 to 8 times the rate of black students, and were more likely to have sold drugs. Drug enforcement differs fundamentally from other policing because drug crimes are consensual activities with no victim calling police. With more than 1 in 10 Americans violating drug laws annually, police must choose whom to target, choices reflecting racial imagery promoted by political and media campaigns. Reagan's media blitz featuring black crack users reframed drug use from a public health issue to an existential threat. By 1995, 95% of respondents pictured a black person when asked to envision a drug user, though African Americans constituted only 15% of actual users. The Supreme Court then adopted rules maximizing discrimination while closing courthouse doors to bias claims. In McCleskey v. Kemp, the court ruled statistical evidence of systemic discrimination wasn't enough. Defendants needed to prove their specific prosecutor or jury acted with racial bias, an impossibly high standard. Criminal justice reform alone won't suffice. We need a movement grounded in critical consciousness about race. Mass incarceration sustains powerful economic interests. Private prisons, phone companies charging exorbitant rates, weapons manufacturers, corporations exploiting prison labor, and politicians building prisons in rural communities. We must discuss race openly rather than treating crime policy as race neutral. People need to understand mass incarceration's racial history and how economic insecurities and racial resentments have been exploited politically. Perhaps affirmative action has functioned as a racial bribe, perpetuating the myth that effort alone guarantees success while diverting attention from mass incarceration. Like Jim Crow, the new Jim Crow cannot be dismantled through litigation alone. We need dialogue fostering critical consciousness, a new social consensus recognizing the invisible cage we've built and our collective power to dismantle it. This means whites must sacrifice racial privileges so us can include all of us. The question isn't whether we have the tools to end this system, it's whether we have the courage to use them.